There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 728, June 5th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you very much, sir. I say greetings and racing regard to all members of the F1 Weekly Familia. And I am back in Tampa, FLA, back to reality.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, did Fernando bring legitimacy to Indy? Do they care? Tony Kanaan mocks LCH. And Rubinho sends text message to Kimi Raikkonen. We have an interview with Enam Ahmed, of course, the F1 Weekly sponsored dude. And we love him a lot because he's a success story here at F1Weekly.com. And, of course, F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio, streaming on WLOR.net, Wednesdays at 11 p.m. and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Nasser, I'm already sounding exhausted with the amount of news, interviews, you being at Poe, at Snetterton. I mean, is there any more than I could add?
Yes, sir. You forgot the Le Mans Museum and my favorite Matra Museum in Romorantin.
I'm telling you, Romorantin gave me a call and said, we're giving Nasser the key to the city.
Oh, wow. That's very good. Well, you know, talking of Enam Ahmed, very pleased to say he's not only leading the British F3 in style, but he has a F1 Weekly sticker on the wing of his car. And we are very proud and thankful to him and his papa for that.
Not only that, but we know that the F1 Weekly sticker on the back wing, not only does it look good, but it also brings victory.
And speed to you.
Exactly. Enough, there's nothing, let me put it this way. Listen, guys, you know, and I've got them, they're right here. You put an F1 Weekly sticker on your car, and we know what it brings, 6 tenths.
Wow.
Bravo.
Well, as you know, Mr. Rogers, May is perhaps the biggest month in the world of motor racing, from Indy 500 to Monaco Grand Prix, and what a historic finish to the big race at the Brickyard. And I have a feeling that across the pond, looks like the Prancing Horse will have a championship-winning rider by the time we get to Arabia in November. And I don't think this horse, Prancing Horse, will be a Finnish breed. What say you?
What say me is, we know it's not the four-legged Rubinho, it's not the two-legged Rubinho, but we know that the two-legged Rubinho is texting the two-legged Kimi Raikkonen, because Kimi Raikkonen, on pole, should have won, did not win, but I don't care, because really, for me, the whole weekend was about Fernando. I'm telling you, gentlemen, ladies, children of America, and the globe around me, Fernando went to Indy, and he surpassed everybody's expectation. He took the level of machismo to another level. I mean, I don't even have a word for the bravissimo that he did for us, Fernando fans. I mean, I was emotional, completely blown away. I mean, is it just me, Nasser, or is this man truly a race car driver's race car driver?
He is. He's a machismo of machismos. There's no question about it.
I mean, my God. P5, your first Indy 500? Is there?
I was not surprised. You know, I mean, I expected that from somebody of his caliber.
Well, of course. But, you know, Tony Kanaan, who was criticized by LCH, didn't, you know, you have to understand that if Fernando had won, it would have been sort of bad for some of these drivers. They were hoping that he would do well but not win, which is what happened due to the Honda bagage. But nevertheless, I am so impressed how he stayed out of trouble, the way he used his spotters, and the Indy dogs, you know, didn't give him any indigestion. And, you know, after the Scott Dixon accident, I became very, very concerned for Fernando's well-being.
Yes, and you know why Fernando did not qualify on the front row?
Let me know, please.
Because LCH was not in the race. He would have pushed him to front of the row, to the front row.
Bravo.
Did you watch every lap of the Indy 500 this year, which would have been a first for you, I'm sure?
Well, I watched a lot of it, Nasser, but of course I had to get up and attend to my barbecue and my hot dogs.
Yeah, you will not believe where I was crossing the pond on an easy jetliner when the race was in full swing, and you're not going to believe this. I watched the last five or six laps in the baggage area of the Charles de Gaulle Airport.
Sacré bleu tous les jours.
Yeah, and I must say that I had a fantastic, fantastic time in your Fantasyland, Francia. And would you like to hear a little bit about the Pau Grand Prix?
Of course, Pau Grand Prix. You know, and I was just speaking with an F1 Weekly member, F1 Weekly Familia listener, and some people have still never heard of the Grand Prix de Pau.
And you are saying that they've been listening to F1 Weekly for a while?
Yes, obviously not close enough.
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, these things happen, and I'm glad I got there. But this is a place, you know, Clark, among the many places I want to go in my life, Pau is definitely a place I've been dreaming of going for a long, long time. And I remember reading about this race as a kid, as a teenager. And finally, thanks to F1 Weekly and the charming host, I made it there, and thanks to their people, we had a media pass. And you've been to this place, right?
Yes.
Well, this was very interesting. You know, I took the flight from Paris to Pau and took a rental car, and I went to this downtown area, and it was very cool. You know, it is like with most street races, the media office to get your pass is right, you know, walking distance from the circuit, which is in the city, of course. And then, of course, I asked them, where do I park my car? Because parking is always an issue. And somehow they communicated to me that there is a parking lot, underground parking lot, and it was like basically walking distance. So I parked my car, my Toyota, I think it was Avensis, it's a model they don't sell here in the United States. It's almost like a younger brother of Toyota Camry. And I spent the whole day there at the track, which was very interesting. And I got the feeling, because I spent the time at the track, but did a little bit of walking around. But I think this is a very nice town. I've not had a chance to really move around the town. Maybe you have. But there is a portion of the town, you know, when you walk up to the circuit, I could not believe there is like a big drop, like a cliff. And you get a very good bird's eye view of the racing action down below. And I had to take a lot of steps, man, to get down to the area where the, paddock was and the pits were and everything. And you know who else was there, which I was kind of surprised? Patrick Tambay was there. You know, poor gentleman is now suffering from Parkinson's disease. And he was there to sell his book. And I bought his book, you know, about his time at Ferrari. If you remember, he drove for Ferrari for a few years on a couple of races. And of course, we interviewed him many years ago in Spain and also followed his son's career, Adrian, when he was racing in Formula 3 and other series in Europe. And of course, you know, they also do a Formula Renault Euro Cup series, and it was great to sit down with Josef Kaufmann and talk about his team and all the drivers they have had over the years. This includes Arie Luyendijk before he found fame and fortune here in the U.S., and Neil Johnny's Pepito was also there hanging out with Josef Kaufmann and his team. Mr. Johnny is a very interesting character. I had a great time talking to him. And he is managing a Chinese driver by the name of Yi Fei Yi, who is racing with Kaufman team in this year's Formula Renault Europe Cup. And the kid lives in Le Mans. And I did an interview with him because we've never interviewed a Chinese driver before. So that's the first. And this young Chinese kid is, of course, after being in France for a few years, is fluent in French, so which is interesting. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about this young English talent called Lando Norris. Last year, he won the Formula Renault Euro Cup with Kaufman team, and both Josef Kaufman and his son Lars are very high on Norris. He is now racing in F3 after finishing second in the first two races of the weekend. He was running away in the final main event when suspension failure led to a DNF. And he's driving for Carlin Motorsports. And, you know, we have visited Carlin Motorsports in England and done an interview with several of the drivers over the years. So I had arranged with the team to interview Lando after the race. And I was trying to get this thing done before the race, but he was not available. And as soon as he crashed out of the race, few laps from the end, I just knew that, you know, it will not be, he will be too dejected for a conversation. And that's exactly what happened. He did stop by to say hello when I was chatting with his Pepito. And Pepito said, I asked him if Lando got his interest in motor racing from him. And his dad says, yeah, he did. But, you know, I had a problem. I didn't have the money to go racing in my days. So I was just a fan watching. Something we at F1 Weekly also do on a regular basis. But I think this kid has a long career ahead of him, a very impressive, already part of the McLaren driver program. And now also very interestingly, I was able to record a conversation with Pedro Piquet, and he is very nice and polite and racing in F3 with the Dutch Van Amersfoort team. This is the same outfit where Max Verstappen spent a year racing before his grand arrival in Formula One. And I was really hoping if his papa was there, but, you know, his papito, I don't think, was there. At least I didn't see him. And so it's quite a nice mix of a few interviews we have. Really, really enjoyed Poe. And shall I talk a little bit about the next stop, Le Mans Museum?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Le Mans Museum, the top of the top, the best of the best. We're talking La France, motorsports. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Well, Le Mans Museum was my next stop, and what a pleasant surprise for me that there was a selection of Formula One cars that raced in the 1967 French Grand Prix, which, as you may know, took place at the Le Mans Bugatti circuit. They also have some very old motorcycles, Renault trucks. They even had a Renault fire truck from the city of Buenos Aires, also known as Buenos Aires, which was kind of a surprise. And also a very good selection of cars that have made history at Le Mans. I know you had told me once upon a time that your dad was at the 1955 Le Mans. Have you been to the Le Mans race?
No, I have not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the museum is very nice. And you know what really surprised me there? You know, Audi won a lot of races at Le Mans in the last 20 years. Man, one of their cars, I don't know which year it was, but it was one of those Audi cars in the last 10, 12 years. Man, this car was so white, Clark. It looked more like a barge than a race car.
Wow.
Yeah, and sports cars are far more heavier and bulkier than Formula One cars, but this was, to borrow a phrase from you, over the top.
Exciting.
Yeah. Another neat thing they have in the museum there is they have a set of podium finishers, model toys, model racing cars. And I really, really spent a lot of time looking at these models because some of them do bring back a lot of memories, especially the Ford GT40, the beautiful Gulf colors, and also the Porsche, Martini Porsche that Dr. Helmut Marko drove very fast at Le Mans. I believe it was 1970 or 71. And I'm not sure if every year is included of these podium finishers, but it was time very well spent and much enjoyed, and I will highly recommend a visit to this museum. Okay, now my final motorsport stop in France was something very dear to me, the Metra Museum in Romorantin, Lanthigny, or whatever that, you know, double town name is called. Location is, and you've been here to this place, right?
Yes, I was actually there on their grand opening when the museum first opened. And since then, they had a flooding, so there's been some remodeling. It's been reopened. So you've seen the new and much more improved Musée du Macra.
Yeah, so you were there on the opening day. That's very impressive.
I try to make an impression on my people.
Yeah, that's very good. Now, of course, it's located a couple of hours from Paris, and if you like the French glue in motor racing history, this is the place. And they have some engines on display. I don't know if they were there when you went there.
Yes.
And they were very impressive, big, you know, nicely maintained there. And, of course, the sound of these engines is still remembered very fondly by racing fans. And I would love to go to some historic event, you know, where they have Metra racing cars, so I can enjoy this in live and in person. And they also have F3 cars, F1 cars, and, of course, the Le Mans winning Metra sports cars. And also included are some designed by Metra for Renault. I believe the Espace was designed by Metra people.
Correct.
Yeah, and the other vehicles also, which I'd never seen, I don't recall seeing ever in life, was the Metra Bagheera.
I used to own a Bagheera.
In Francia or here?
In California, right here. I had a gold Bagheera, and I was bad to the bone.
Yes, and I took quite a few pictures at these two museums, and I will post them on our website in the very near future. And now, crossing the channel, it was off to Snetterton, straight from Heathrow, and I'm very pleased to report that the European support vehicle number one is electrifying now. Mr. Brazier's Tesla is very impressive and great on e-mileage. It has a very cool feature in case cars are parked too close to get in the normal fashion, and Mr. Brazier demonstrated this feature to me. Remotely you can turn on the car and it will reverse itself, allowing for a comfortable entry. And the acceleration is also very, very impressive. And I have to say, this was my first ride in a Tesla, and I'm very, very impressed by the car, the overall package, and the acceleration was, I don't know, for some reason I thought electric cars were slow, but this is just the opposite.
Of course, Nasser. If you just give it some thought, there's no lag. It's all torque. So if you just put your accelerator pedal down, it's going to go like a rocket, but that's when it's gulping lots of electricity, so you can't drive like that all the time. But yes, electric cars are extremely quick, all torque, no lag. You're not waiting for a piston to go up and have an explosion to push it down.
Well, you know, if I knew all of this, I would be Patrick Head's right-hand man.
Of course. And, I mean, I have to admit, I live in San Jose, California, where Teslas are now as common as BMW 5 Series. They're absolutely everywhere. But, yes, all electric cars are extremely fast off the line. Definitely fun.
Yes, and at Snetterton, round 3 of British F3 was in action. It was good to see Dr. Mark Barrington again, and he has posted some high-quality, professional-style photographs in the forum section of F1 Weekly. And per his suggestion, which he has made to me a few times, I am very seriously considering going to the Goodwood Festival next year. And I would like to thank Dr. Farrington and Mr. Brazier again for their assistance here every time I'm in England. Much appreciated. And regarding action on the track, Inam Ahmed won 2 of the 3 races, sporting very proudly our F1 Weekly stickers, as we already mentioned, on the rear wing of his Carlin Motorsports car, and we will feature his interview in today's podcast. And you know, so far they've had 3 rounds. Each round is 9 races, and he has won 6 of the 9 races and has a very healthy, I think it's like a 44-point lead in the championship. So if he can pull it off, that will be very, very good for us and F1 Weekly and him, and we will continue to track his progress as he moves up, as we are doing for some other drivers and done for many others down the road. So what say you, Senor?
No, I think that's fantastic. I'm really proud of Inam. He's done a fantastic job. And once again, he's another young driver that we have followed from the beginning. And we appreciate, hence the F1 Weekly sticker on the wing. It was tastefully done very, very nicely done, and certainly a proud moment for moi.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, and very deservedly so. Yeah, and when I gave him the one of our, you know, F1 Weekly check, so they have forwarded to the London Exchequer or whoever the head of Bank of England is, he is verifying the authenticity of this check before it is put in Barclays Bank.
I understand. And of course, this check is known around the world.
Yes. It will be a couple of years before they finish counting the zeros on it.
Exactly. But that's what we do here. We keep them counting.
Yes, exactly. Okay, sir, I want to hear your thoughts on the Monaco Grand Prix.
Well, first of all, I was so pumped up about Indy 500 that I wasn't thinking about Monaco, but luckily Monaco came before the 500. But I have to admit, Indianapolis, IMS, have done a fantastic job. You can go to their website. You could stream every day what they're doing on the track. This is open. This is pleasant. This is free. This is great. And F1 has got a lot to learn from what IndyCar is doing, as far as I'm concerned. It was so wonderful to go on their website to stream what was going on the track on a daily basis. Exciting. Now, let's get back to Monaco. Fantastic. Fantastic qualifying. I was impressed. LCH, apparently, not so impressed. I think thinking about Fernando in those glorious moments at the speedway just sort of messed him up a little bit.
Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you, it was a very, very pleasant surprise to see Kimi Raikkonen on pole, and this was his first pole since, I believe, the 2008 French Grand Prix. But I have to say the result was expected. Again, you know, Lewis Hamilton, he has one of these moments where he cannot understand the tire or the balance on the car, and you know, he had what I would call a Baku moment. You know, he did not try to move the wall with his car like he did in Baku, but it's one of these off weekends that he's going to have that has now all of a sudden given Sebastian Vettel a 25-point lead. But I have to say, I don't know what you were thinking before the start of this Monaco Grand Prix, but I had a very strong feeling that if Seb was not leading at the end of the first lap, he will be after the first pit stop. It was pretty much like the race Kimi won in Brazil in 2007 to take the championship from McLaren drivers. If you recall, it was his then-teammate Felipe Massa who had the situation under control, and then all of a sudden he goes into the pits, and oopsie, Kimi was leading. But this time, roles were reversed. What say you on this? Do you think there was some, I don't want to say hanky-panky, but there was a desire on part of Signor Arriva Bene as to who will win the race?
I wasn't surprised. I've already said it on this program that Kimi won't win a Grand Prix this year. There's a reason for that. He's a Rubinho. He's a Eddie Irvine. And that's what it is. I mean, he knows his place in the team. He might not like it, but he knew at the beginning of the Grand Prix that he wasn't going to win this race. He knew. You could tell by his body language and his demeanor that this was Sebastian Vettel's race. Ferrari has set it up that way. It's going to be that way. And that's the way it is.
Yeah, and I still think he's going to win a race or two, maybe after Sebastian wins the championship. But victory for Seb was the first Ferrari win in Monaco in 16 years. Amazing. But more importantly, it gives him 25-point lead over LCH. And Lewis and Mercedes now have a real problem. Ferrari has a car, according to their technical guru, Signor Binotto, which is good for all tracks. And their German Amore does not have sleepy days like some other drivers. I shall not take any names. But still a long way and slow boat to Yas Marina. But I really hope we have a tremendous season like 1976 or 2007. And may the best pilot land on the top step of the championship table. A lot of racing to go. How do you see the championship evolving from now?
I think it's going to be tight, but I think Sebastian Vettel is going to take it. He's got the finger waving. He's been exercising the finger. The biggest problem is Red Bull did not design the car with Adrian Newey. Now he's come back to help him fix the problems so they are no threat. So it's Mercedes and Ferrari, and Mercedes is trying to get to grips with the new car and the tires. Ferrari has done it. Mercedes has not. And not only that, but LCH has lost his mojo.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to win quite a few races still, but it will be very hard to overhaul a 25-point lead that Sebastian Vettel has now. Now, you know, things do work out. I mean, Sebastian may have an issue, or he may find, hey, you know, who knows, he may find another cucumber on the road in Hungary or some other Grand Prix that will cost him the win.
Nahrain Karthikeyan.
I was not going to take that name, but thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you very much. And I also want to say that, Renault is looking good. I'm proud of Nico Hülkenberg. And Haas came in with the points this Monaco Grand Prix, which they needed, and they're starting to get their act together. Very impressive. And, of course, the talk is always about these new rookies, and that would be Lance Stroll. What's going on there? I don't know. Who knows? You know, I was so caught up with Fernando and the Indy 500. I still think that's going to go down in history. I think he's going to come back and do it again. And I'm telling you, the press, the Indy people, the staff were really enamored with Fernando. I know I'm biased. There's no doubt about that. I am the Fernando number one fano, but everybody else is impressed. I'm impressed. You're impressed. The only person that wasn't that impressed was LCH.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this was him coming here racing just to join and to do the Indy 500. I think he gave them probably at least 3 years of publicity in one show, in one appearance.
That's very, very true. I mean, there was a lot of fans that were tuning in, that were clicking in online. I'm telling you, I mean, and I'm one of them. I mean, I usually catch the last 10 laps and I'm done. I go back to my barbecue in the backyard. But I was mesmerized by practice, by qualifying, and how well he handled himself as a rookie in this completely different racing venue.
Well, I have news for you, Mr. Rogers. If you want to be impressed by Indy cars, I am going to recommend you go and watch 10 laps of racing at the Fontana Speedway. I mean, wow. Even those who don't like racing will probably be blown away how fast these cars go and how quickly they come to a very, you know, slow speed. And I don't know if you ever watch, they don't do Indy cars at Michigan International Speedway. Oh man, that was far beyond what Indy or Fontana will, because it's more banked. I mean, they've had some incredible, incredible races at Michigan. They used to do two races at one time, Michigan 500, and I think the other was like Michigan 200. But you're not too far from the Fontana IndyCar track, and I think the season ends there. You really should go and see them at high speed on a banked oval. It's super impressive.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try and check it out. And I sent a letter to LCH asking him to try the Coca-Cola 600.
Yes, and you know, I've been to quite a few other non-F1 events. One of these days, you and I will have to go to Eldora also. Because, you know, let me tell you, say, many, many years ago, you know the San Jose Speedway?
Oh, yeah.
Like half a mile. I went to this AMA motorcycle race. Man, I've never seen anything in my life so intense. Unbelievable. All these guys on these bikes were going, slipping and sliding and just like hugging each other, but still going fast. I mean, there's a lot of motorsports that's very, very impressive. You know, I think people who follow NASCAR or Formula One only, to borrow a phrase from Mr. Rogers, they need to have an open mind.
Just like me. And Steve Faub.
And Steve Faub.
Of course, of course. I mean, yeah. He is the picture that's in Webster's Dictionary for open mind.
Exactly.
So.
And yeah, the Indy 500 was incredible, and what a finish, you know. Elio Castroneves almost became a four-time winner, and there are only like three drivers who have done this. AJ Foyt, Rick Mears, and Alan Sir Sr., I believe, are the only three others. But Sato-san saved the day for Honda and Nihon by becoming the first Japanese driver to win the greatest spectacle in racing. And if anyone saw Scott Dixon's accident, which you mentioned earlier, man, what can I say? Incredible lucky to come out of this and race this past weekend in Detroit. Now, did you hear about this journalist in Colorado, what happened to him?
No.
I mean, hard to believe people would do this kind of stuff in this day and age. He wrote a column for which he lost his job, saying that he was not comfortable with a Japanese driver winning the Indy 500.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I mean, to me, this was funny stuff, but it's real.
Does he know that it's 2017?
I don't know.
Maybe he thinks it's 1941 still.
I don't know.
Wow. It brought back Kamui Kobayashi and his exciting drives. The day that Takuma Sato came in fourth in the Jordan, and it was as if he had won the race. I was so happy for him that if Fernando couldn't win and he was out because of Honda, well, I won't even go there, but everybody was rooting for Sato-san. It was exciting. I was so happy for Sato.
Yeah, it was fantastic to see him win. He's been very quick, but he has been crash prone. Just ask Dario Franchitti. But, you know, he's a very exciting driver, and you said it very well when you said it reminded you of Kamui Kobayashi. And I remember Kamui Kobayashi's, I think it was his first race with Toyota in Brazil.
Yes.
Where he banged wheel with Nakajima's son. Kazuki Nakajima.
It was great stuff. Sato deserves this. He did a fantastic job. And he drives for a great team. Let's not forget, Andretti Autosport has done a fantastic job in terms of putting a good car together for these drivers.
Oh, yeah. They've been very successful at Indy, and it's just fantastic. And you know, this past weekend, they were racing at Indy, their duel in Detroit, as they call it, race organized by Mr. Penske himself in his backyard, and both races are won very impressively by Graham Rahal. So it's been a very fantastic few weeks for IndyCar racing.
I was very happy for Graham's father, Bobby. You know, these wins don't come very often, and for Graham, it's been a long time coming. So he swept the weekend, and congrats to Graham Rahal.
Yeah, and you know, we interviewed him when he first came, when he actually was just out of Formula Atlantics, and he was trying to get a ride in IndyCar racing. Very nice kid, and it's good to see good people win.
Former F1 Weekly people.
Exactly.
Yep.
And any last comments on Indy 500 without saying Fernando Alonso's name?
Well, I'm telling you, without Fernando, it's a boring race. I didn't like the fact that they replaying the Scott Dixon accident. It was gruesome. The way he hit the guardrail, and Castro Neves certainly had a lot of luck going under the car as it was airborne, but really gave me the willies. I'm glad Fernando came out of this unscathed. Fantastic race for Fernando. Fernando, once again, just proves my point, and much easier.
Okay, well, yeah, Fernando, like me, is going back to reality this coming weekend in Montreal, which leads us to Lance Stroll. You know, he's been getting a lot of flack in the media that, you know, he's not getting anything done. He doesn't have a point, this and that. What do you think?
Hey, listen, if you can't take it, stay out of the kitchen. This is the way it is. Jordan Palmer is getting a lot of flack. Lance Stroll is getting a lot of flack. And Stoffel Van Dorn is getting a lot of flack. All, you know, you either come out looking like a Fernando or you're going to get a lot of flack. That's called Formula One.
Yeah, that's very true. But I think in the case of Lance Stroll, you know, Julian Palmer has a problem. He's up against Nico Hülkenberg. And you know, when Esteban Gutierrez, who is now trying to make a name for himself in IndyCar racing, when he went against Hülkenberg as a teammate at Sauber, you know, it was just Nico Hülkenberg had the upper hand throughout the season. And, it's not looking good for Stoffel Van Dorn. I mean, this kid has been very successful in junior formulae. But as far as Lance Stroll is concerned, I think daddy's money will keep him in Formula One racing for quite a few years. And sooner or later, he will, you know, put it all together. I mean, the kid is quick. There's no question about it.
I know, but the problem is There is no sooner or later in Formula One. Let me tell you, if Lance Stroll doesn't kick it up a notch, they might even call Rubinho.
No, you know, I think his father has the capacity to pay Williams more money than they will get with a point or two from Rubinho.
I see what you're saying, and that's the balance.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, it's the dollar. So, anyway, why don't we take a quick break and come back with interview and Motorsports Mondial.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back after this brief message.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid, and this sad news, which is really brutal. And, of course, we will have a great interview that'll pick it back up a little bit. Thanks, Nas.
Yeah, you know, Clark, Nicky Hayden situation, you know, ex-MotoGP champion, Nicky Hayden lost his life after being involved in an accident while biking near Rimini in Italy. I got up one morning and I saw this. This was devastating news. You know, these things hit us very hard as we experienced with the unfortunate Jules Bianchi situation. You know, we followed his crossing of the pond with great interest when he joined MotoGP. And I remember just before he clinched the championship, he was taken out in one of the last races by his own Honda teammate, Danny Pedrosa. The Kentucky kid was not a happy camper, of course, but he kept his cool in the final race to join a very successful and long list of American MotoGP world champions. And one of them, Freddie Spencer, pays a very good tribute to Nicky Hayden on the Motorsports Magazine podcast. And even if you don't follow MotoGP and if you want to know a little bit about Nicky Hayden as a person, as a rider, I will highly, it is a pretty moving tribute. You know, I was listening to it last night. And very touching, I have to say. And so just very sad news for a motorsports fan. And, you know, what can you say?
It's devastating. It's devastating. I mean, I have to tell people that I actually ride a bike to work every day. I mean, it's only a five-minute ride, but you have to be careful. And I have to say it, that it's mostly the bike rider that makes a mistake. Cars are everywhere. They don't know what they're doing. They don't see anything. They're texting. So the bike rider really needs to pay twice as much attention as most cars. And I was really struck by this because I had recently met his uncle, Larry Hayden, who is in the same industry that I'm working in. So it was devastating. And
I think that's a good story. I don't think you've mentioned this on the podcast before. Will you tell our listeners how this panned out, what happened, how you met his uncle?
Well, we're both in the same industry. He's on the wholesale side. I'm on the retail side. And he gave me his business card one day, and I looked at it, and it said Larry Hayden. I'm just going, Larry Hayden? And I looked at him, and I go, Nicky Hayden? And he goes, yeah, I'm his uncle. And we're close. We, you know, talk all the time, and then a month later, this happens. So, terrible. My condolences to everybody and to Larry. And I just feel terrible about the whole thing.
Yeah, it was very, very sad. Also, you know, the past few days, we got the news that Eric Broadley has passed away. This is the man who created Lola Racing Cars. He was 88 years of age. Some of his major designs were the Lola T70 sports car, the John Surtees 1967 Italian Grand Prix winning car was also a Lola design. It was built for Honda and was known affectionately in racing circle as Hondola. In the United States, for many years, Carl Haas was the Lola importer. Graham Hill Indy Victory 1966 was in a Lola, and so was Ari Loewendijk's 1990 Victory at the Brickyard. And, you know, Mario Andretti and Nigel Mansell are two of the many, many drivers who won championships in IndyCar racing, driving a Lola racing car. And this is very impressive. You know, names like John Barnard, Patrick Head, and Tony Southgate, who designed the beautiful BRM F1 cars in the early 70s, all worked at one time or another for probably at Lola. So another, you know, every year we have passing off some major connection. You know, we earlier lost John Surtees. So it's just names are drifting away from the big, big motorsports heritage.
That's very, very true. And a lot of these big motorsports heritage guys are children of post-World War II. And of course, tomorrow, June 6th, will be D-Day plus 73 years. So these enterprising young men who came out of the service and used their perhaps aeronautical skills, machining skills, mathematical skills from their service to their countries, and they're all passing. So there you have it, Ness. The changing of the guard.
Yes, sir. But, you know, we're happy for the legacy and the memories they're leaving behind. And those carry, you know, people who follow their industry, like you say, will remember them very fondly.
Absolutely. And we're going to keep those memories alive right here on F1Weekly.com, Ness. Speaking of alive and speaking of great news, of course, the carrier of the F1 Weekly logo on his rear wing, Enam Ahmed. Ness, a great interview. Let's introduce this now.
Yes, sir. You know, he has been racing in go-karts when we met him first time and interviewed him. He came to Vegas some years ago as a young kid. And his final year of karting was very impressive. He won 5 championships. He raced against Michael Schumacher's son in karting and then moved into single-seater racing in the Formula MSA, which is now the British F4. Last year, he moved into British F3 and won a race last year, which is always good in your rookie season. And now this season is all coming very, very good for him. He has a lot of wins, a very impressive performance at Snetterton, and then a very healthy lead in the championship. And now it's just a matter of, you know, adding more and more wins and more success. And hopefully he will move on to bigger and better things next year. And, of course, we will continue to follow him and some other racing talents that are making a name for themselves in junior categories these days.
Absolutely correct. And once again, I want to thank him for putting the F1 Weekly logo at the Snetterton race. And I hope he continues to keep the logo on his car to bring him good luck and many wins.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, folks, we are here at Snetterton for round 3 of British Formula 3 with our old amigo, Senor Enam Ahmed. Enam, welcome back to F1 Weekly. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for coming all the way to Snet from America, just for me. So I'm really happy that you're here. And yeah, we're going really well. The practices have been going quite strong. I've been quickest a lot of the time. But now we've got qualifying coming up. So yeah, be exciting to see how that goes.
Okay, you had a very strong start to the season. This is round 3. Each round has 3 races, and you won the first 4 races. Was that a pleasant surprise? And has that put more pressure on you to win the championship?
It was kind of a pleasant surprise. Yeah, but it hasn't really increased the pressure. All I really want to do now is to have like a good qualifying session. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
And I'm sure winning the championship has to be your goal. What are you expecting down the season, and who will be your main competitors?
I think my teammates, particularly Cameron Dess, will be like one of my main competitors. Also, Toby Sowery, who's really, really strong. He didn't have a good last race, but he's really strong around the next few tracks. So, yeah, I think those two in particular will be really good. Maybe Cameron a bit more because we're in the same car, so it's even tighter between us.
Is it more fun to have a competition from within the team, or is it more at peace when you have a competing driver from another team?
I think it's more fun when you have it in the team, because then I can see what he's doing, so I can learn from him as well. But having other good teams fighting with us is really, really good. I think it's really good for the championship as well. So, yeah, it's really tough this year because we have very experienced guys returning, like Toby, and he's won quite a lot of stuff, and he's quite experienced and old as well. So, like, you know, he brings something to the table. And then Cameron, obviously, being the F4 US champion, he brings another thing to the table. So, yeah, it's really, really good.
Are there drivers in the field whom you race against in karting days also?
Yeah, James Poole. I raced him in karting. I'm sure there's one more. I forgot though. No, I think it was just James, really. I think it's just been James. James Poole. Yeah.
Okay. This is your second season in British F3. How would you compare your present team, Carlin, with the team you drove last year? And what has been the main difference between year one and year two for you?
Obviously, Carlin's a much bigger team, so they have a lot more facilities for them to access to extract best performance from the car. It is very different to Douglas, just, you know, the amount of money that's behind them and, you know, how big the team is in general, how many resources they have. But Douglas did a very good job for me last year. They gave me a really good car. You know, we still won a race, got a few podiums and things like that. So, mainly, I think the difference between last year and this year has not just been the team, but also in my driving, have been a lot more consistent with everything. Obviously now I have a second year experience. It's first time in cars. I've done like a second year in something. You know, I've taken all the experience from last year and moved into this year. So, yeah.
And last year you also did some races in the European Open Formula, which is like the Spanish F3. What was the main difference between the F3 car they use in that series and the European series than the British F3?
Well, the car has less power in general, slightly less downforce, and also mechanically it's not as refined. So the damper suspension is not going to be as good, so you're not going to have as much mechanical grip as well. So it's overall slower. But I never driven a European Formula 3 car, so I couldn't really tell you to compare. But that's the feedback I've had from other people.
Okay. And I understand in your final years of karting, you were taken for dinner with Mr. and Mrs. Wolf. Tell us about that experience.
Well, I was in Qatar for the FIA Awards, and I met Toto and Susie as well. And I got on really well with him. I was talking to him quite a lot, and I was leaving. He was just like, "Oh, do you want to have a ride with us?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he took me in his S-Class with Susie. And so we had a conversation, and he said, you know, talk to me when you're going to go into European Formula 3. So I just kept my head down since. Hopefully I'll win this year, and maybe I'll give him a call.
Good idea. He takes text messages also.
Oh, yeah, or a text. I'll WhatsApp him, why not?
Okay, now, first of all, talking of Mercedes, when Nico Rosberg retired last year, a few days after winning the championship, was that a surprise for you?
No, not really. I think he won what he needed to win. So I think he was like, he didn't want to go through all that hard work again. So I think that was always his lifetime ambition, just to win a world championship. So fair play to the guy. He can have a rest now in his life.
And tomorrow is the Indy 500, and Senor Alonso will be there. What do you think about his decision to race there and miss Monaco?
I think it's really cool. I think they should let more drivers do that, because I think it's a very different experience, America. I think it's probably one of the coolest. That's definitely one of the top three coolest races you can do in the world. I definitely like to do it. I wish him all. I really do hope that he wins, actually, because then that would be really cool. And especially that he would be starting fifth, so he'll have to overtake a lot of people.
You mentioned European Formula 3. Is that what your game plan is for next season?
Yeah, most likely, yes. I'll be making the step to European FIA Formula 3. So, yeah. But all of my main focus is just to win this year.
Now, in years past, British Formula 3 has made a trip to Spa and sometimes some other tracks overseas. Are there any plans for a race overseas outside the UK this year?
Maybe. I'm not really sure. We really haven't planned anything yet, but it's definitely on the cards.
No, I'm talking about the British F3.
Oh, sorry, the British F3. I think, oh yeah, we're doing a race in Spa. That's it. That'll be in like one month time, which is always a cool place to go to.
You've been there. What is like going down Eau Rouge?
It's not really a corner, to be honest. So it's not really like that challenging. It's just easy flat. But the first time you go through there, you don't realise how steep it is until you drive up there, and then the car bottoms out. And you can't see. You can only see the sky. Then you turn. Then you go up the top. In the wet, it's really hard. But actually, in my opinion, the most challenging fast corner is probably Puan, which is like not flat. It's like just like on the verge of being flat out, but not quite. It's a double left, especially with the low downforce that we have. It's really difficult. So yeah.
How has the testing gone for you here at Snetterton so far?
Yeah, really well. We've been topping, every time I've been on new tyres, we've been topping the timesheets. So I think we're looking really strong for qualifying. Just got to nail a lap together, see how it goes. It's all going to be fun, a bit to play for. I just got to do the best I can.
Yeah, it's a very nice, you know, you can stand on sort of a hillside here and get a view of 80% of the track. Question I have for you, I really like the first turn here. Is it flat out?
Depends on wind. Today with the tailwind, probably not. But I have done it flat on some occasions. But it's like on the edge. Like it's, if you can do it flat.
Sorry.
If you can do it flat, it's definitely quite a big time gain. So I'll let you know after the qualifying whether it is or not.
Okay. Now, round two was at Rockingham, which is part oval, part road course. What's your take on racing on what they call a roval?
I mean, we only do one corner on the oval, so it's not really much to say about it. It's not really one of the best tracks in the UK. It's probably one of the most boring, especially with the infield. Maybe if they do a British F3 like one-off oval race, and we just run the extreme low downforce and just do the oval, that'd be quite cool. But anyway, yeah.
What's the best track here in the UK that you have raced at?
Brands Hatch, but the Grand Prix circuit. That's really cool. Yeah.
Okay, finally, we thank you for your time. How about a message for our listeners?
Thanks for tuning in for F1 Weekly. Nassi has been a friend of mine for a long time now, and hopefully you can follow me on my journey to Formula 1.
Thank you very much, and we want a pass or two when you get to Formula 1.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely for you, Nassi. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Inam, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Keep up the good work. And now, I just want to quickly mention before we go to the end that 50 words on the forum is dying and dying quickly. Some people are saying that it might need to move towards Facebook. We do have an F1 Weekly Facebook page. You can go there. But as of today, the 50 words on the Monaco Grand Prix is a lot of crying and whining. And all I have to say is go to the Facebook. Or don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. But we know Fernando was machismo. So, Nasser, let's talk about Canada.
You know, this has been Lewis Hamilton's hunting ground. I say LCH will win this race. And Sebastian will be on the podium. And I think it's going to be a good race.
I beg to differ. Lewis Hamilton will still not get the setup right on the car. They'll be whimpering. And Fernando, being back from Indy 500, will be super machismo in the paddock, everybody floundering and loving him. And, of course, I believe that Max Verstappen will look good in Canada, and he'll be back in the talk of F1Weekly.com, because, really, Verstappen has sort of dropped away.
Well, you know, he doesn't have the package, nor does Daniel Ricciardo.
I know, but Fernando doesn't have the package, but he's still in machismo.
Yeah, sure, for you and...
And his mother.
Madre and his people in Viva España.
Don't forget, he is going to be world champion in F1 one more time, because we know what's going to happen.
Tell me.
You didn't hear? He's going to go to Renault. They're going to start winning. Vettel goes to Mercedes, and LCH goes to IndyCar.
Yeah.
Wow. I know.
I will be very surprised if he stays with McLaren next year. I think he will go to Renault.
I think so, too. It's always nice to go home. They have his bed already, and you know, the star on his door. Oh, the memories.
But I have a feeling that Renault will have a good package in 2018. But by the third race, Fernando will be asking the Renault headman, Cyril Abitbol, is Hülkenberg related to Hamilton?
Bravo, bravo. Fisico. Well, that's good. At least we have a Grand Prix de France next year.
You know, some years ago I was talking to a F1 journalist. This is when Nico Hülkenberg's name was mentioned quite a bit about joining Ferrari, and he came pretty close to. He said, Hülkenberg has one problem, and I said, what is that? He said, well, you know, he's young, he's good, and people like him may not behave by saying to the team, yeah, I'm number two, and I'll race that race. So that may have gone against him. But I would like to see Fernando in a package where he can win a race. He's one of those few drivers that, of course, he has to have a winning car, but he does not need a super, head and shoulders above everybody to win a championship. The way he won against Schumacher twice has convinced me that he can win in a competitive car. Let's just put it this way. Not a non-competitive car, but doesn't have to be the best of the best package.
Exactly. That 6 tenths goes a long way.
Yeah, see, because, you know, he knows when to finish second and when to finish third, something Sebastian Vettel also knows.
That sounds very Prost-like.
Yeah, I mean, thinking man's driver, you know, they are quick enough to win races on their own, but when they cannot, then they know how to finish second and third, you know.
It's all about the money.
It's all about the points and the championship, but you know, I'm hoping that Lewis Hamilton will have a fight back and win some more races, and let's take it to the end of the season, man, and let's have a real duel in the desert between two hungry camels, you know.
Okay, Nasser. Nass, I want to first say welcome back to Merca. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you very much.
cat that won't cop out when there's danger all about.
Shut.
Right on. You see, this cat Chef is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
What I'm talking about, Chef?
Well, we can do it.
He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.